only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 12:30 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the suddenly kind of stormy-looking Thursday afternoon here. Boy, I just took a peek at the National Weather Service radar, and I hope you have your rain gear handy. Well, this is no surprise, and we need it, really. I mean, man, it hasn't rained for weeks, huh? We've had a little bit already. We may be getting more than we bargained for here within the next hour or so. Maybe even some thunderstorms, they tell us. Well, we're nice and dry inside. Maybe you're in the car. We know a lot of people listen to the program in the car. This is an Ask the Lawyer Day. It's one of our more popular features. We do it periodically throughout the year, and we do it through the good graces of the Butler County Bar Association and the executive director there, Janice Hackett. So we always like to thank Janice. She lines up local attorneys to talk to us about the law, because it's an area that can be confusing to most lay people, even a little bit intimidating sometimes. So we try to help you through some of those problems. And today we're going to be talking specifically about elder law problems. Our guest is local attorney Julie C. Anderson. Julie, good to see you again. It's been a long time since we shook hands. Nice to have you back.
Thank you, Dave. It's great to be here today.
Several years, anyway. I don't know how long for sure. Yeah. You practice with a local firm, do you not?
I do. I'm a partner with Stepanian and Menchik. We are here in Butler on Main Street.
Mm-hmm. My engineer tells me if you can pull your chair in just a touch, that'll be grand. Okay, we got that rich timbre in your voice there. So, yeah, they're right on Main Street with a very distinctive architectural facade to the office. I love it when I go by.
Oh, thank you. We do have those two columns out front and a beautiful wooden door, and it's quite lovely, if I may say.
Looks kind of like the entrance to a Greek court, perhaps.
A little bit, but yeah, we're pretty friendly and down-to-earth inside there, though.
Well, I didn't mean it that way. I meant law and Greek and Roman culture goes back a long way. Part of our culture, part of our legal culture. So let's talk a little bit about your area of focus. In fact, I can say your area of specialization, because you are a certified elder law attorney, right?
That's correct, Dave. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So what does that mean, as opposed to somebody who just, I don't want to use the word dabbles, that's loaded language, for someone who might handle some elder law work and then do other stuff too? You pretty exclusively work with elder law, huh?
Yes, that is my sole area of practice, is elder law and estate planning. And as a certified elder law attorney, I went through a process of proving a period of time where I practiced exclusively in elder law, and taking an exam, actually, in addition to the bar exam that all attorneys have to take to practice law to earn the certification as an elder law attorney. So it's unique, and I believe I'm still the only attorney in Butler County that has the elder law certification.
You know, I don't feel so bad, because I didn't know about that. I didn't know there was a certification for this, and obviously, if there aren't very many of them, I guess that's why I didn't know about it. Yeah. By the way, you're originally from this area, right?
Yes, I grew up in Renfrew, went to Butler High School, and I've been practicing here in the Butler area for the last 6 years. Before that, I practiced in Allegheny County, but it's great to practice in your hometown.
Yeah, it is nice to work in your hometown, isn't it? Yeah. I have lots of questions about elder law, and this is an area where the demographic for folks who need advice in elder law is growing rapidly. I saw a statistic a month or so ago about the number of Americans who turn 65 every day. It's thousands. I forget. It's like, I don't know, 9,000 or 10,000. It's really astonishing. But this is an area where a lot of people suddenly are saying, you know what? I may need some advice here. However, it's a heck of a good idea not to wait until you're 65 to think about that, right? Especially if you're talking about estate planning.
That is absolutely correct. And elder law is really a fairly broad area of the law that does deal with the true elderly individuals in our population, but it also really deals with anyone who wants to prepare for the future, whether you're a younger family who is doing basic estate planning to make sure that your children are provided for, if heaven forbidding you and your spouse would both pass away, or if you are one of those baby boomers who is looking down the road to long-term care in the future and wanting to retire comfortably, you always need to have a plan in place regardless of your age.
Folks, if you have questions along the way, as I said, I have lots of them in this particular area of law, but feel free to join us. Our telephone number is 283-2525. And any advice or things that we talk about here on the program today should not be relied upon by any listener as specific legal advice. The views expressed here, the views that we're going to talk about, are based on limited information that might come from a caller. Specific problems should be referred to your attorney, or you can get an attorney if you don't have one. And the Butler County Bar Association can help you out there. They will never recommend a specific attorney, but if you call them and indicate the general area in which you may need legal help, they can give you a list of four or five attorneys, and you can make your choice. And, of course, the views expressed on the program today are not necessarily those of the Butler County Bar Association. Sorry, I got to go through the legal disclaimer there. We do that every time we talk to a surgeon or a physician or an attorney or anything. Julie C. Anderson is with us. So, elder law. I dare say a generation or two ago, we never heard that term. Hey?
That's a great point. It's really a relatively new area of the law that grew up largely in the late 80s and early 90s. As individuals started to age and as the cost of care went up astronomically, and I think that's really driven a lot of the development in this field. Right now, the average cost of nursing home care is $321.95 a day. Now, that's an average across the Commonwealth, but certainly there are nursing homes in Butler County that are $9,000 and $10,000 a month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of people say, well, you know, you can get, I'll worry about that later, get long-term care insurance. Long-term care insurance is also very, very expensive. Mm. And you said average daily cost of a nursing home right now is about $321?
Correct. $321.95 a day for a skilled nursing facility. But even an assisted living or a personal care home can be $3,000 and $4,000 or $5,000 a month, depending on your care need. Mm-hmm. And long-term care insurance is a wonderful thing. I always encourage clients, if they have it, to retain it. But as the baby boomers age, it's becoming more challenging to get long-term care insurance, and it is not the only thing that you should be doing to plan for your future. It's a wonderful tool, but it's not the only thing that you need to be doing.
Good point. Well, let's start taking some calls here. If you have calls that relate to anything regarding elder law, feel free to give us a buzz here on Ask the Lawyer, 283-2525. Caller, thanks for waiting a little bit. I appreciate your patience. Go right ahead. It's your turn with Attorney Julie Anderson.
Okay. I have just one question. I'm an elderly person in my 80s, mm-hmm. and I have co-signed for one of my grandchildren, and she's now out of school and working. I wondered how that affects my estate if I should pass away before.
What did you co-sign for? A loan or something?
Well, when she went to college, her college loan.
Okay, I got you. You co-signed for her college loans, and they're probably not paid off yet, I'm guessing, huh?
No, they're not, and she is paying them, but I just wonder how that would affect if I should pass away before they're paid.
Okay. Well, I want to make sure that Julie understands that. Do you have a sense of what she's asking there, Julie?
I do, and that's a great question and a fairly common question. Parents and grandparents always want to help their children and grandchildren, and that's a great thing. It's a little difficult to give you a specific answer because it's going to be governed by the terms of that loan contract, and that's essentially what you signed was an obligation to repay that loan. As long as your granddaughter continues to pay that, she should be the primary obligor. But if she would not continue to pay that, then certainly that could be a difficult situation for you even before you leave us, and could be a very challenging circumstance if you were to pass away.
Yeah, well, that's my problem. I know that she is taking care of it, and she has an excellent job from going to school.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wondered how that would affect my estate to my other children. You know, I have that all mapped out, but I just didn't know whether that would fall back on the estate or whether they would hold the estate up until she's paid, or I just didn't know how that worked.
Mm. If she continues to pay the loan, it's probably not going to be a problem. But again, that's something that you would have to actually get that contract out and read mm-hmm. that fine print.
Okay.
And hopefully you did that before you signed it. But if you didn't, it's a good time, or even if you did, it's a good time to review it and to have a frank conversation with your granddaughter about the importance of her continuing to fulfill her obligation under that loan.
Let me ask, listeners, stay with us for a second here. Mm-hmm. Let me ask what might be a very dumb question. Can you get out of, if you co-sign for a loan for, you know, your granddaughter, whatever, can you ever get out of that, or are you in that forever?
That is a great question, and you can if the loan is essentially refinanced and if there's a new loan that would then fulfill the obligations, and that would be something the granddaughter could do in her own right instead, perhaps now that she does have a job and is maybe more creditworthy.
Mm-hmm. So you're worried.
I tried to do that, and they just didn't seem to want her to combine that. It's through Wells Fargo, and she says I cannot get them to agree to refinance it in her own name.
You've already looked at that.
And so I you know, I don't know why that is, but
well, I can understand your concern, especially if you have other benefactors that you've listed
right.
in your will. You mm-hmm. you don't want them to be shorted because you co-signed for this loan. I can understand
that was my problem. I just didn't know how that fell if I should pass away. Right now I'm in good health, but mm-hmm. you never know.
Would it be bad advice, Julie Anderson, to have her get that loan and have an attorney take a look at it?
I probably will discuss with her if I get to the point where I feel that, you know, that I'm in dire need of having an answer to that. But mm-hmm. I just wondered how that fell.
Good question.
But it would carry into my estate until her loans are paid off. Is that what I understand?
Not necessarily. Again, unfortunately, that goes back to the contract. If she's the primary and she continues to pay, mm-hmm. it may not have an impact on your estate.
Okay. It's kind of a tough situation.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Good question.
Okay. Thank you very much for your information, and
thank you.
We just hope for the best.
You've probably answered a question of a lot of other people. Thank you, my friend. Thanks for joining us today. 283-2525 is our number. Ask the lawyer, 283-2525. In the area of elder law today, which elder law and estate planning, which really, that's not all that narrow a field. I mean, you're doing a lot of things in this area. I assume one of them would be if people don't have a will yet, to get that taken care of, which is paramount, or maybe even taking a look at a will that someone may have had prepared 20 years ago or something like that, right?
That's correct. We do foundational estate planning in the form of wills, powers of attorney for health care, and advanced directives. We typically suggest that you review your estate planning every 3 to 5 years because your circumstance could have changed. The circumstances of the individuals you've named in those documents could have changed, and the law could have changed. And we did have some significant change in the last 2 years with respect to powers of attorney for financial matters. So it's critical, if you haven't looked at your power of attorney in the last several years, or if you don't have one, that, in my opinion, is actually the single most important estate planning document that you can have, because it permits someone else to handle your finances and make decisions for you in the event you can no longer do that for yourself.
We'll talk about that in some more detail. Let's take another call. Ask the lawyer, 283-2525. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn with attorney Julie Anderson.
Yes, I'm calling for a friend.
Yes.
they have a payee on their Social Security, and the payee is spending their money.
That's something, so, Julie, help me to understand that, maybe some of our other listeners. What's a payee on Social Security? I never heard of that before.
So I think what the caller is referring to is an individual who's receiving Social Security and probably Social Security disability based on an injury or an illness that's persisting, or maybe supplemental security income, what we would call SSI, based on a long-term disability. And they've been determined by the Social Security Administration to be unable to handle those funds and manage them for themselves. So they've had a representative payee appointed on their behalf to use their Social Security funds for their benefit. And I think the caller's indicating that maybe the funds are not being used for the benefit of the Social Security recipient. Is that what you're indicating to us?
Well, the bills are being paid, okay, but I'm just calling for a friend. I don't understand all this, but the payee is going in and moving money or taking money out of the account to use. Now, can they do anything about that?
So that's really a question more that deals with Social Security and the specific terms of their appointment. It depends what they're using the money for. The money always has to be used for the Social Security recipient. So if it's providing...
Well, it's not being. That's why she asked me to call, and I said, well...
So it's being used for
this, best I can.
Being used for personal use instead of for the Social Security beneficiary.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's probably a violation of the law, I would imagine.
It sounds like it could be, and representative payees can be changed, and perhaps that's the appropriate thing to do in this instance.
Well, that's already been done a couple times, and it keeps happening. So would she see a... Go back to Social Security and see what they can do?
Social Security is who controls the appointment of the representative payees. So, yes, unfortunately, it seems like another trip there is necessary, and perhaps a little more care in who's being appointed as the representative payee, because those representative payees are to be filing reports on an annual basis with the Social Security Administration indicating how they're spending the money. And if they're not doing that properly, the Social Security Administration needs to know.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Sure. I hope that helps your friend out. And thank you very much. Phone number 283-2525. 283-2525. Is it possible to get someone other than a daughter or a relative appointed to be a payee? Could you get someone outside the family, a trusted adult?
Certainly, it could be possible to have a non-family member appointed as a representative payee, and sometimes that is the most appropriate thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's the second question I thought might be dumb, and it turns out to be a pretty good one.
Yes, it was.
Let's take another call. Elder law is what we're discussing today. Issues regarding elder law. Our phone number is 283-2525. Caller, thanks for waiting. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn with attorney Julie Anderson. Go right ahead.
Julie, hi. I was wondering if you could tell me what are the pros and cons of having one of your children's name on your home deed?
This is a fabulous question, and a question that I get asked in my office on a weekly, if not daily, basis. So when you're thinking about your home, your personal residence, that is where you live and you own that, or perhaps own it with a spouse if you're married. And people frequently want to make sure that their children receive the home if they were to pass away. And I respect and understand that. There's a variety of ways that that can happen. You're asking whether or not you should be putting a child's name on that deed as an owner. And there's some risks involved in that. The benefits, because you did ask for the pros and cons, would be that if a child would own a half of that, for instance, and then the parent passes away, only one half of the house would be taxable for inheritance tax purposes at the parent's death, provided that transfer occurred a year before the parent passed away. And that's primarily why people want to make this transfer during their lifetime.
So their children can pay, their child can pay less taxes on the house.
Correct.
Okay.
My concern, though, is if your child experiences a divorce, if they're married and they later become divorced, if they have financial problems and they get into debt, if your child, heaven forbidding, predeceases you, or if they become disabled, those are all events that would severely impact your ability to continue to live there and use the house as your personal residence. Even though you think of it as your personal residence, you may find that you can no longer live there, or that you may be paying tax on your own home. And your child could actually end up paying more in income tax if you were to transfer the house to them during your lifetime than they would pay in inheritance tax. So it's a really, sounds like a really simple question, but can be a fairly complicated analysis, but it's full of risks, in my opinion, that don't make it a good fit for everyone, and it is definitely a unique analysis that we have to do in a case-by-case basis.
And you can't do it at the last minute.
No.
There's going to be a one-year look-back, right?
Correct, for inheritance tax purposes. You have to make the transfer more than a year before the person passes away to have the inheritance tax be not applicable to the transfer.
Boy, we gave you a lot of info there, caller. Does that answer your question, or do you have some more questions?
Well, that was a lot of information. So the three D's in opposition are if my child is divorced, deceased before me, or disabled. Is that correct?
There's actually a fourth D. If they get into debt, unfortunate financial circumstances.
There they half own the house, so the debtor could go after the house.
Correct.
Wow. And if they get divorced, an ex-spouse would be a part owner of your house, too. I see what you mean. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Now, I understood that one of the benefits is the child, if the child owns half, they only pay half the inheritance tax. However, what was the one where, what example did you use that they would be paying more inheritance tax?
They actually could end up paying more income tax than they would pay in inheritance tax if they do not use the home as their personal residence. Inheritance tax in the Commonwealth is 4.5% of your transferred assets to children. That's the rate to children. So they would pay 4.5% inheritance tax, but, and this is a little bit of a more technical issue, if they do that, if you do the transfer and they own it and they don't use it as their personal residence, then if they subsequently sell the property, it's going to be a capital gain for them for purposes of their personal income tax. And so they'd be paying 15, 20, or perhaps more, 15 or 20% or more in income tax on the sale of the real estate instead of 4.5% inheritance tax.
I see. Yeah.
Okay.
That makes sense.
All right. If, say, Florida was, or another state was my primary residence, and this is, I do not pay Pennsylvania state tax, how would that affect it?
So I'm very hesitant to even really delve into that because every state law is different and attorneys are licensed on a state-by-state basis, and I'm only licensed here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, not in Florida. But federal income tax, I can say that, is the same in every state because it's a federal law. So you may very well have some of the same concerns even if your residence is in Florida, but I have to encourage you to talk with an attorney who's licensed in Florida to get a specific answer to that.
And by the way, there's
Julie, thank you for your information and your candor. Thank you so much.
Sure, thank you. There's a threshold for paying federal estate tax, right? And it's really high. I mean, you've got to You've got to be close to a millionaire before you start worrying about that, right?
You have to be more than a millionaire. It's more than a great problem to have a federal estate tax issue, because it means that as a single person, you have more than $5.49 million, or as a married couple, you have twice that. So you can have nearly $11 million as a married couple before you have to start worrying about federal estate tax.
Not too many of us are going to have to worry about that, I don't think. Let's go to another caller here who's been very patient, and I appreciate that. We had great questions from that last caller, and that was fine. Caller, this is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn now with attorney Julie Anderson. Go ahead.
Are you talking to me?
Yes, I am. Yes.
We went into an attorney about the 1st of July, a local attorney, and we wanted a will made up, but mostly we wanted our living will. You know the will that handles the medical?
Mm-hmm.
Made up. And they sent us the a copy that wasn't exactly right 6 weeks later. And we sent that back. We fixed the things, a couple things wrong, not very much. We sent that back. And they, I've called them four times in the past 2 weeks. It's getting scary. My husband's been very sick.
Well, let's talk about
it. And this taken care of.
Sure, I think we pretty much understand your situation here. So let me bring Julie in, attorney Julie Anderson. First of all, you can change an attorney anytime you want to, can you not, Julie?
You can.
Well, my question was, do I have to pay her for what she has done? Because we called and they said, oh, well, we didn't get it done because my assistant quit. Mm-hmm. And then she didn't get it done because she's never in the office. So
services rendered probably have to be paid, I would say. Yeah.
To the extent that work was done, there is a theory under the law that she should be paid. The Bar Association does have a program or a committee that deals with disputes about fees for attorneys and for the members of the bar, and also for, you know, members of the community such as yourself. If you're struggling with that issue, that's something that the Bar Association may be able to assist you with as well.
Well, that's good advice to you. And obviously, when you know, we don't want to mention any names here because there's always two sides to an issue like this. But please,
getting very frustrated.
I can understand
they
that.
Don't even return our calls. Yeah.
Well, I would call. You could just call the Bar Association and explain there. You say, have a dispute over a fee, and they can take it from there. Yeah. Call the Butler County Bar Association. That's good.
We don't even
know
what the fee is yet, or if they're charged. You know, we don't know that. But I had a hint for that 80-year-old lady.
Yes.
I get calls all the time saying that they wanted the money that we signed for our grandchild to go to college. We never did that. Maybe it's a scam on her. I'm sure she looked into it, but that's something to think about, because we get calls all the time about that, and we never signed for any grandchild. Or child, for that matter. Our kids got their own education.
Well, if you didn't, then I wouldn't worry about it.
Well, I know I don't, but yeah. I was worried about that lady in case she didn't really check into it really well.
Well, thank you for mentioning it to her. And
okay.
Thank you. I hope if you call the Bar Association, they can point you in the right direction on your concern there, okay?
Okay, thank
you. All right,
you.
Sure. They're on South Main Street, by the way, right? Yeah, South Main. Yeah. What was I going to say? I was going to say something. Oh, phone calls, they call them Dunning phone calls when they call you and they say, you owe this and you owe that and everything. This happened to me about 15 or 20 years ago, Julie. It was the strangest thing. I was getting calls from some obscure law firm in Georgia, state of Georgia, okay? And they claimed that I had never paid a bill for the repair of my pickup truck at this repair shop in, I don't know, Alpharetta, Georgia, or something like that. I said, well, number one, I don't have a truck. I've never had a truck. I've only been in the state of Georgia once in my life. I was driving through to Miami. I said, I don't know what you're talking about. And they wouldn't let go. You know, they called me for several months. And I was, finally, I just, I quit answering the phone because I couldn't, obviously, there was some sort of a mix-up on their end.
Right.
I never I certainly never skipped out on paying for any repairs to my pickup in Georgia. I'd forgotten all about that until the lady mentioned that there. You do have mistaken identities sometimes. Even when your name is as unusual as mine is, you get mistaken identities. So.
It certainly does happen, and unfortunately there are a number of scams that come about that target the elderly. Some of them are just scams that don't target anyone in particular. One that is still quite prevalent at the moment is if you have any transfer of real estate, the scam artist, if you will send you a request for payment to get a certified copy of your deed. So if you've sold your house, or if maybe you've transferred your house into trust or transferred your home for some reason, period of time after that transfer is complete, the scam artist sends you a notification that you're required to pay a certain amount of money. It's usually very similar to the actual fee you would pay to record the deed, and that fee would be paid to the recorder of deeds, and it's perfectly legitimate, but the scam artist is trying to get you to pay them money to get a certified copy of the deed. The deeds are freely available at the recorder of deeds in the courthouse, and you can even access them online. So there's absolutely no reason to be paying money to get a copy of your deed. But unfortunately, it's a very official looking mailing, and I get a lot of questions about that from clients. So, you know, if you have a question about a potential scam, you should always investigate before you send anyone money at any time.
Yeah. Be on the safe side, which is what I finally told these people. You know, I said, look, send me a letter. We'll deal with it that way. I'm not dealing with this on the phone anymore because you people are nuts. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I never got a letter. I never had a truck. What are you talking about? My blood pressure's going up just remembering this story from 15 years ago. We need to take a break. It's Ask the Lawyer today. And we're pleased to have local attorney Julie C. Anderson with us here in the studio. Her practice is focused. She specializes in elder law and estate planning, and we're very pleased to have her with us here today. So we'll pick up our conversation here in just a moment or so, right after a quick break, for a word from some of our sponsors today, one of which is the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler. The people at St. Vincent de Paul, I have such admiration for them. So many people volunteer there. I've seen them working in the food cupboard and other places, just selfless, to help those who are less fortunate, less needy. The Society of St. Vincent de Paul operates a food cupboard. It's on North Elm Street in the Lower Institute Hill area of the city. They operate a client aid program, which can sometimes help a needy family come the end of the month, maybe with a heating bill in January that's higher than expected or something like that. And they also operate the Society of St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in the Greater Butler Mart on Route 8 South, where you can donate unwanted or unused items, and they'll sell them at a price that maybe a lot of people wouldn't be able to afford. All the proceeds, every penny, stays right here in Butler County, helps to fund the food bank and the client aid program. So think about that, especially if you're doing any cleaning, getting ready for the holidays, you know, cleaning out the guest room or the hall closet or whatever. Don't just throw that stuff into the trash because it goes into the landfill. Think about donating it to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. And if you got big stuff like furniture or something, call them, they'll come and get it. Thrift store, Greater Butler Mart, Route 8 South. We will be back to talk more with Attorney Anderson here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words.
Hi, this is Howie Pinckney with Pinckney Capital Management in Portersville. Today, many people need help managing their investments. The investment options available today can be confusing. If you would like to talk to someone for help, why not call me for an appointment? Howie Pinckney at Pinckney Capital Management, 1284 Perry Highway, Portersville, Pennsylvania. My telephone number is 724-368-4224. Securities and advisory services offered through Commonwealth Financial Network. Member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor.
Looking for a way to make your company's benefit package a little more competitive? Here's one that's so easy, more than 130 local organizations and businesses have added it to their programs. Membership in Armco Credit Union. At Armco Credit Union, your employees will have access to the best loan rates and more free banking services, while direct deposit and payroll deduction options make it convenient for both of you. And best of all, it doesn't cost you a thing. Learn more at armcocu.com or by calling 284-2020. Armco Credit Union is an equal opportunity lender and is insured by NCUA.
Welcome back. Elder law is the topic of discussion today, and we have a certified elder law attorney with us here in the studio. She is Julie C. Anderson. She is a partner in the local law firm of Stepanian and Minchak on Main Street in downtown Butler. And we're talking about issues that have to do with elder law. Now, that is not necessarily restricted to seniors. I mean, there are a lot of folks who begin, hopefully, they begin taking care of some of these things when they're still in their younger years. I mean, it's never too early to make a will, for goodness sakes.
No,
who knows? You know?
Never too early to make a will, and never too early to have a power of attorney either.
Mm-hmm.
And typically what we see is when people are getting ready to retire, that's a really good time to be doing your estate planning and your long-term care planning to make sure that all of that hard work that you put in during your working life is really not potentially wasted on care costs or who knows what might come about, and that you're really protecting yourself and getting a plan in place to provide for children, grandchildren, charities, whomever you might want to benefit. But and you're also protecting yourself and protecting your spouse if you have one at that point. But retirement is a really great time to be sitting down and thinking about kind of that second half of life and how you can best navigate those times.
And who among us, some lay people I'm talking about, knows about this stuff? I mentioned to you earlier in our conversation long-term care insurance, but the only thing I knew about it was that it was mighty expensive. I've heard that. I didn't realize, and you said right away, well, that's not always the best way to go. There are some other things you might want to think about. So these are things that you would want to sit down and talk about with an estate planner or an attorney. And a lot of times you can get a bunch of this stuff taken care of at one time, can't you? Certainly a will, a power of attorney, advanced a medical directive, which is commonly referred to as a living will. It's really not the accurate term. It's advanced medical directive. What is that anyway, by the way?
So an advanced medical directive, and it is often called a living will, is an opportunity for any one of us to put into writing when it is that we would want or not want in the event that you have a very severe incurable illness or injury, or perhaps you become permanently unconscious, and then you're able to say what you would want in terms of care or what you would not want. If you don't want life prolonging procedures, or if you have specific thoughts about where you would want to be treated, or whether you would want to have a feeding tube or a ventilator placed on you. And it's critically important that we have that in writing and that you've made that declaration so that it can be relied upon and it can be enforced if, heaven forbidding, that type of circumstance would come upon you.
A couple of more questions about that. And listeners, I failed to give our telephone number. I apologize. It's 283-2525. If you have a question, feel free to join us in the conversation here. That's all we're doing, conversation. We're not offering specific advice. But 283-2525, 283-2525. So this advanced medical directive, living will. If people are intimidated by this, and, well, how can I don't know whether I could think through all of this. Very often you're provided with kind of a check sheet that will say, for example, heart resuscitation or a feeding tube, where a list of all of these things, maybe a whole page of them, and you can just check off. So you don't have to sit there and think about all this stuff. It's because that would drive you, you know, who could remember all that? And then you'd get home and you'd say, oh, I forgot about this. So you usually get a sheet that is just a check-off sheet. And the other thing that I've found that really confuses people about this is that, as I understand it, at least, Julie, correct me if I'm wrong, the only time that this really takes effect and kicks in is if you are unconscious or in a coma, or, I mean, if you're lying in a hospital bed and you can still talk and you know, even though maybe you can't walk, but if you can talk and think, you can supersede the living will, the advanced medical directive. You can tell the doctor what you want and what you don't want, right?
Yeah, that's right? A great reminder, Dave, because oftentimes people do become a little concerned about signing this document, thinking that they're handing over their medical care and treatment to someone else now, and that's not the case. It's specific to the time, which is hopefully never, but specific to the time when you're unable to make or communicate your own decisions. So if you're able to communicate your own decisions, even if you can't speak, there's plenty of forms of nonverbal communication and lots of adaptive devices now where we can still communicate with someone who maybe cannot speak. But as long as you're able, you should be making your own healthcare decisions.
Absolutely. So don't let that scare you about not signing and filling out an advanced medical directive. What about power of attorney? I think I made a little note here that said expand on this. You said earlier in our conversation that there had been some recent changes in Pennsylvania state law with regard to power of attorney. What's that all about, Julie?
Correct. So powers of attorney for financial matters are critically important because they permit someone else to make financial decisions for you and pay your bills and make sure that your taxes are filed on time. They're just critically important. And Pennsylvania law changed in this regard and now says that we have to have different language in the actual documents and the notice provision, which is required to be on there by law. And some of the ways in which you grant your agent authority and allow them to do certain things for you have to be more specifically detailed now. So if you have a power of attorney that's 5 or 6 years old, it may work, it should work, but banks and financial institutions can be a little bit leery of using a document that's drafted under the old law because they're concerned that they may be allowing your agent to do something that they don't really have the authority to do. So it's best if you're still able to update those powers of attorney to make sure that your agent can do anything that they might need or want to do on your behalf. And I think it's really important to remember that the power of attorney is so important because it prevents the possibility of a guardian ever having to be appointed for you. And a guardian is someone who would be appointed by the courts to manage your finances and make medical decisions for you if you cannot and you don't have a power of attorney, or there's some defect in the power of attorney that renders it unable to be used. So it's a court proceeding in front of a judge with testimony of your physician and your family members, and it's a very time-consuming, it's potentially very costly, and it's just a really invasive process. There are some individuals who just can't sign a power of attorney and a guardianship becomes necessary, but to the extent that you can avoid that, you really should.
283-2525 if you have questions about any of this stuff. And don't be embarrassed if you have questions. This is not stuff that most of us deal with on a regular basis. That's why we have attorneys to handle these things for us. 283-2525. When you sign a power of attorney, first of all, you can designate anyone you want, right, to be your
that is correct.
Actor, yes. What agent, I guess, is the term you use.
Yes.
Does it always have to be one person? Could you assign two people to have your power of attorney?
That is a great question. It does not always have to be one person. It can be multiple individuals who are named as agents under the power of attorney.
Mm-hmm. And once you sign that, does that person or persons immediately have that power, or is it only if you become incapacitated in some way?
You can draft a power of attorney in one of two ways. You can have the power of attorney be immediately in effect, so that as soon as you sign it, your agent could go out and transact business on your behalf and sign checks for you, pay your bills, etc. Of course, before they would do that, they would have to take the power of attorney to the bank or financial institution and register their signature and prove that they really are the person named in the document. But we can also draft them so that they're what we would call springing powers of attorney that don't come into effect or spring into effect unless you become incapacitated. That's probably a discussion beyond our time limit, frankly, even today. But I prefer to have powers of attorney that take effect immediately because we don't know what might happen. And it can be very difficult to prove that you're incapacitated and prove that your agent now has this authority. And in the time frame when we're trying to do that, your bills may be going unpaid and things may be left undone.
Take another call. The phone number is 283-2525. 283-2525. Ask the lawyer. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn with attorney Julie Anderson.
Hi.
Hi.
We want to have our son have power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the bank the other day and they said that you could just have him sign a paper, and then, you know, if he needed to write checks or anything, he would be able to do it. Is this correct or not?
So banks sometimes can provide a power of attorney form that is limited to that bank account, but it would be limited to that bank account. And it's impossible for me to know what they were really referencing. Sometimes it's a little confusing because you may go in and ask the bank, how can my son or daughter be able to sign checks on this account? And while you might just want them to have the ability to sign checks, the bank could be actually giving you documents that create a joint ownership interest with your child in the account so that the child can not only write checks but actually owns a portion of the account. And sometimes that happens and you're not even really aware that it's happening. And that could be problematic later on because if you were to pass away and the child is a joint owner, it goes directly to that child. If you have multiple children, that may result in quite a bit of family unhappiness. And if, heaven forbidding, your child who's on that bank account with you predeceases you, you would actually be paying inheritance tax on your own money, which I'm certain is not the outcome you're looking for. So it's always good to clarify what you're being asked to sign before you sign it.
Yeah.
Another thing,
sure,
my husband was very ill a couple years ago, and we have a living will so that, you know, if nothing was to be done on certain things.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody ever said anything in the hospital about if we had a living will even.
That's surprising to me, but depending on how long ago it was, the physicians and hospital staff may not have been quite as attuned to that. Certainly today, I think everyone in the medical profession is very aware of the existence of advance directives and the idea that maybe not everyone wants prolonged treatment if
right.
There's no hope of recovery. So I think, I'm sorry that happened to you, but I think in the future and now, you'll find that medical staff is quite a bit more aware of those types of issues.
Well, that's a great question, caller. Yes, thank you.
2 years ago, maybe.
Well, that is surprising, but it's hard to know why it didn't happen, but certainly I would encourage you to talk to your children and make sure that they know what you would want or not want, and encourage them to be vocal advocates for you if you're ever in that circumstance.
We have that in with our will now, that we had what we did and didn't want done.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was signed and everything, so that's, you know, legal. But like I said, no one ever said anything, you know, when he was in the hospital. You know, we never took anything to the hospital or anything, you know, to show that we did or didn't want something
done. That's interesting. That seems to be pretty unusual these days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thanks. Good question. By the way, let's take a hypothetical case, but it kind of applies to what that caller was talking about. If your, say, your wife is very seriously ill, but the husband is still alive, the husband's in the hospital. Can the husband make decisions for her?
So hopefully he would have a health care power of attorney that would designate him as the decision maker for his wife. Mm-hmm. If he does not, Pennsylvania does have a law called the Health Care Representative Act that would permit him to make decisions for her. And hopefully if they have children, he would be including them in the loop, if you will, as to her condition. But technically he would be the one who's still able to make decisions. But his authority is somewhat less than had she had a power of attorney and an advance directive and specifically stated what her intentions would be.
Phone number to ask the lawyer is 283-2525, 283-2525. We're getting a lot of great questions on elder law issues today. Well, that last caller gave me a question. What do you do with the... Okay, so I go to an attorney, I get an attorney, or I go to my attorney, whatever your situation is. You get a will made out, or maybe you're readjusting a will that you made a long time ago, take another look at it, get a new will drafted. You get the power of attorney, you get the advanced medical directive, you get these three documents. In many cases, you can do this all at once. In fact, in most cases, you can mm-hmm. do this all at once. What do you do with these things? What do you take them home and put them in the refrigerator, or what do you do with them?
So you definitely want to keep them in a place of safekeeping, whatever that means to you. But no one is going to be able to locate them if you put them in a drawer or the freezer or whatever special hiding place you may have. I always encourage clients with the medical directives to take those and lodge a copy with your primary care physician. More and more doctors and hospital systems are moving to electronic medical records so they can scan it into your EMR. It's still a good idea to take a copy with you if you know you're going to the hospital for a procedure or a surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly you should give one of the originals, if you have, or the original, to the primary decision maker for your health care, because they need that document to show that they have that authority.
Should you give a copy of the will to the executor that you've named in your will?
That is really a personal decision, but I typically counsel clients not to do that, because if you later make changes to the will, you may be creating hard feelings.
Ah, I never thought about that.
If you've named a different executor or changed who's going to be receiving assets under your will.
All these things we never think about until we talk to an attorney, for goodness sakes. Let's take another call, 283-2525. That makes such perfect sense. I can't believe I didn't think of it before. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn with Attorney Julie Anderson. Hello. Go ahead.
I have a question for the attorney.
Sure. She's listening. Go ahead.
My son married a widow and moved into her home, and her home was pretty much a wreck, plus he tore down a garage and built a new garage. And I gave them enough money to build a new garage.
Okay.
2 years later, she decides that she wants a divorce. So now they're going to be getting a divorce. And I was wanting to know if I could file a lien against her property or something to get that money back.
That's a really interesting question, and it comes up more frequently than you might imagine. And so from what I'm hearing, it sounds to me like you actually gave your son a gift of funds, and then he invested it in property that was owned by his then-spouse that he didn't own. That is always dangerous territory, to be investing money in property that you don't own. And if you gave him a gift, once it's his, he's not really required to account to you or to tell you what he did with the money. And if it was truly a gift, and I don't know if you really thought of it that way, but that's what it sounds like to me, then he really can't be required to give it back to you, and she probably can't be required to give it back to you. And that's probably a hard lesson learned, but gifts can be very risky when we're talking about children who are marrying and maybe divorcing, and we really usually want you to be very careful about that. And I don't often recommend that you give out gifts like that because of the very reasons you're experiencing, that you lose control and it's your money, but now it's gone and you can't get it back.
Oh, sorry, that's probably not the answer you wanted to hear.
Is on the check. I put a garage on it. Mm-hmm. The money was going to the garage.
Well, the problem, as I see it, sir, is that your son's then spouse was the owner of the property, not him. So
His name is on the property.
Well, it was jointly owned? Well, that might give a different factor to it. This is one of those areas where, and I'm sure you can understand this, sir, we're only, you know, talking about general questions here. It sounds like you have a pretty specific problem, especially with the joint ownership now, that you might want to have an attorney review that as opposed to, to us trying to haggle through it here on the air. You understand what I mean? I'm sure you can understand that. Yeah.
Something I can't do anything about.
Okay. Well, maybe
thank
not.
You,
oh, thank you. Good question. How good? Well, as Attorney Anderson said, this comes up much more often than you would ever imagine. And I didn't realize it when he started talking about his problem. So this happens in a will, too. We were talking about if you made a will, if you were a good soldier, by gosh, and you made a will when you were 25 years old or 30 years old or whatever, but that's now 20 or 30 years ago, you better check that. Who were your beneficiaries? Have any of those beneficiaries, if they were your children, have they divorced? Is that going to change how you divvy up your estate? You know, good idea to take a look at that again, right?
Absolutely, and sometimes people will name grandchildren, and then they have more grandchildren, or maybe you named a child and they predeceased you and you didn't provide for potentially their children. So we never want to accidentally disinherit someone by virtue of having an old document that we haven't updated. And there can be some danger there. So it's always a good idea to keep these things current. Even if they don't need change, you should pull them out and, as I like to say, knock the dust off of them and make sure that they still are a good fit for you and for your family circumstance.
If you do want to change your will or change your power of attorney or your advance directive, for that matter, you can do any of that. And you don't, correct me if I'm wrong here, Julie, you don't have to go to the same attorney who originally drafted these documents. You can go to another attorney if you so desire, right?
That's correct. You're always free to make a choice regarding your attorney and choose anyone that you think is going to be a good fit for you. And sometimes I see documents that were drafted by attorneys who are no longer in practice or who passed away, and that's one of the reasons that people haven't updated them, because they don't know who they should be talking to now because their attorney for the last 30 years is no longer in practice. But as you mentioned earlier, the Bar Association maintains a referral list, and they can certainly give individuals ideas about where to look to start that process of finding a new attorney.
I had a couple of notes that I jotted. We covered so many bases here today. Wow, great questions from people. When we were talking about inheritance tax, and gosh, this is half an hour ago now, the federal inheritance tax, the federal estate tax, as it's called, you need to be a millionaire, more than a millionaire, to have to worry about that. So I think for 99.9% of the people listening now, forget about it. That's not going to be a problem. Personal enough. It's a business. That might be a different story. But what about inheritance tax from Pennsylvania? There is no threshold, right? You pay on everything. Now, your children pay 4.5%.
That's inheritance correct. Tax. Yes.
What about your spouse?
So the inheritance tax rate to spouses is 0%. Essentially, there is no inheritance tax on transfers to spouses.
So if a husband dies, his estate goes to his wife, and there's no inheritance tax that she has to pay.
Correct.
If he wills something, whether it's money or property or his car or whatever, to any of his children, they have to pay 4.5%.
Correct. 4.5% to children and grandchildren.
Now, is there a higher rate, if you will, it to, you know, Joe Schmidlap down the road? A friend of yours is not related?
Certainly. The rates are really dependent on the degree of relationship. So if you are benefiting siblings, then brothers and sisters, it's 12%. If you're benefiting nieces and nephews or anyone who's not related to you by what the law calls blood or marriage, then the rate is 15%. So that's a pretty high rate of tax mm-hmm. on your assets that you accumulated during your lifetime.
These are the complexities of elder law, folks, that make it not only, I hate to say, a necessity to consult with an attorney, because it's not that. It's the peace of mind that you get when you consult with an attorney over these issues. My goodness gracious, don't stew over them. Don't worry about them for months or years. You know, see an attorney and get it straightened out. Get your questions answered. If you don't have an attorney, you can call the Butler County Bar Association. They will give you a list of a handful or so that you can choose from. Obviously, they're never going to recommend a specific attorney. They're not in the business of doing that. But they'll certainly be able to help you out. Janice Hackett is the Executive Director of the Butler County Bar Association. And we thank her for helping us to organize our Ask the Lawyer segments. They never fail to be enlightening and entertaining, and sometimes even a little fun, too. Yeah. Our guest attorney today, Julie C. Anderson, she is a partner in the local law firm of Stepanian and Menchak. They're located on South Main Street in downtown Butler. And Julie, what a pleasure. I know that we did this some years ago, but it was great fun today. And I want to tell you, I got a whole page of notes here that I took, and I'm sure we had a lot of listeners who were taking notes, too, as we gave out some general advice here today. So nice to have you here.
Very good. Thank you, Dave. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
The advice offered on the program today should not be relied upon as specific advice by any listener. The views expressed are based on the limited information given in the call. Specific problems should be referred to an attorney, and the views expressed are not necessarily those of the Butler County Bar Association. There's more to come on It's Your Turn Today. By the way, coming up tomorrow, a wonderful chat with an author. He's not in Butler. In fact, we'll be talking to him in Israel. He's in Jerusalem. It's Ilan Greenfield. He has just published a really incredible book on Jerusalem. It's called My Jerusalem. He was born there. Pictures, short essays, just two or three paragraph essays by a whole bunch of people. Pictures of Jerusalem like you've never seen before. Beautiful. We'll talk to him tomorrow. We'll talk to Deb Carbeau tomorrow from the Zelianople Library about an event they've got coming up, Zelianople on Tap. That sounds like it might be fun. I don't know. We'll get the details. And we'll also be talking about type 2 diabetes in kids, not adults, kids, on tomorrow's program. Okay, quick break. Guests from the Musical Theater Guild's production of Beauty and the Beast. Up next, here on It's Your Turn on WISR. Stick around. We'll be right back.
That frightening sound is one we hear quite often throughout the day. Our heart quickens and immediately we wonder what happened. A medical emergency can be frightening. Every tick of the clock crucial. And that's why Butler Ambulance Service is dedicated to be there with every ounce of care possible. Butler Ambulance Service is within minutes of providing you or a loved one with treatment and transportation. Call 282-9595 to find out more. Butler Ambulance Service is a phone call away from serving you.
Tanglewood, your hometown center for entertainment, presents an evening of comedy and mystery Saturday, October 21st with Dial M for Murder, presented by Pittsburgh acting group Mysteries Most Wanted. You may remember it as a crime mystery film directed by Alfred Hitchcock. Doors open at 5 o'clock. Buffet dinner by Chef George at 6, showtime at 7. Only $25 per person. As always, it's BYOB. Reserve your tickets for Dial M for Murder at Tanglewood Center, 287-0021.
Well, the holidays are coming, and that means your office will start receiving tasteless tins of popcorn, boring baskets of fruit and nuts, and a plethora of 2018 calendars. Give your clients something better, something memorable, and something that says Butler. Like a custom gift box from Cummings Candy and Coffee, you can choose from an assortment of chocolate-covered chips, pretzels, graham crackers, and cherry cordials. Add in a half-pound bag of Butler's own proprietary blend of coffee, the Main Street Roast. Call Barry for your corporate order. Cummings Candy and Coffee, serving the Butler community since 1905 and now in three locations.
Welcome back, good friends. I've been looking forward to the next segment of It's Your Turn today for a while because we have guests here from the upcoming Musical Theater Guild production of Beauty and the Beast, the fantastic Broadway musical, the Disney arrangement. And the director of the show is with us, and that's Larry Stock. Larry, good to see you.
It's good to be here, Dave.
I didn't realize you were directing this show
Yes.
until I got my call board in the mail a week or so ago.
Yeah, they had asked me a couple years ago. We were trying to get the rights for this, and we weren't able to get it at that time. So Matt Stallman, who's the producer over the summer, said, "Hey, you still going to direct for me on this?" I said, "Since it's you, yes. But I love the show." And I'm really glad I did. I've got a terrific cast, and it's going really well, and I'm really pleased. So
one of those cast members also joins us, and that's Whitney Angeloni Rudiger. Whitney, good to see you again.
You too. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's always nice to have you here. You've done a lot of Musical Theater Guild shows over the years.
Yes. I think this is going to be my 52nd.
Get 50 out.
Well, okay, not Musical Theater Guild, but all in all.
All shows 50 together?
Second show.
I would say 17.
Musical MTG. Theater, okay.
That's mm-hmm. phenomenal.
That's awesome. Yeah.
I love it, so.
Talk about getting the amateur acting bug, huh?
Oh, wow, yeah. Well, she's great to work with, too. Yeah. So
have you ever done any equity work?
I haven't. I toured with Latshaw Entertainment, mm-hmm. and we went to New York and Boston and those kinds of things. And it was like a Christmas spectacular with their Latshaw Pops Orchestra, but no equity work. I'm hoping to get into that pretty soon.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So you have to, equity folks is for acting. There's amateur acting, and then equity is it's professional.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Professional exactly. acting. And I don't know. There's all kind of rules and regulations. You have to do so many shows before you get an equity card, a union mm-hmm. card, or whatever.
It's kind of hard to get.
Is it really?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't have any worries about ever getting one, so I'm not worried about it. But,
yeah.
Wow. Somebody of your talent doesn't surprise me. So you went on the short road with Latshaw? You didn't get any pay for that at all?
I did, but it wasn't under any union or equity. But yeah, we did get paid for it. So it was a nice little bonus before Christmas.
Okay, I don't want to talk too much about inside baseball, but I just thought I'd ask you while I had you. I happen to love this show as well. It's a rare show anymore, me, for a musical that is absolutely appropriate and loved by every single member of the family.
Yeah, it's for
you can
all
have
ages.
A 3 or 4 year old kid who's going to go bananas over this show, and you can have grandmas and grandmas who take those 3 year old kids, and they're going to go bananas over this show.
Mm-hmm. Well, the things
appropriate to all ages.
Yeah, it is. It's a typical Disney thing that there's things in there that adults really like and enjoy. And some of the humor that the kids enjoy, they're not sure why, but they enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And then there's other things that the adults can say, oh, that's pretty funny, okay. But no, it's very well written. It's a really well done show.
What kid's not going to enjoy when the Beast comes out?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I know.
Beauty and the Beast. Folks, are you familiar with it? I'm sure many of you are. I've seen performances a few times. It's not a show that I grow tired of, like some. I'm serious.
Leave the comment.
I don't need to see another performance of Oklahoma in my life.
Oklahoma.
I agree.
Yeah, and I've been here, done that. Yeah.
I've done that show a couple of times. Maybe that's why. It's a wonderful show. It's just I've
been there, done that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've been to the Elephant's Eye enough times. But Beauty and the Beast, I love it. Whitney, what part are you playing?
I am playing the part of Belle, so I'm the beauty. But I love it. It's so much fun. This is the first time I've actually got to play, you know, a Disney character, a Disney princess. And it brings a different side of me that I really like. It kind of reminds me a little bit of Children of Eden when I played Eve, so I have to act a little bit younger.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun, like whenever we do Be Our Guest and I see the enchanted castle and all the objects come out, it's just, I love it. I absolutely love it.
It's my favorite song on the show.
Be Our Guest, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Be Our Guest, Be Our Guest. I hear it and I start singing it.
It's one of those numbers that you just...
Yeah, and you'll come out of the theater humming this for days.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Speaking of which, I better get to the particulars here. This show, it's not this weekend, but it's next weekend, right?
Mm-hmm. Next weekend.
What's the, how many performances? And
We open on Friday evening, 7:30, and then we're doing a Saturday matinee, and I'll talk about that in a second, at 2 o'clock, and then Saturday evening at 7:30, and then again Sunday at 3 o'clock, and those are all at the Suck Up Theater. But Saturday matinee has been underwritten by the Butler Eagle, and they are offering $5 tickets for the kids.
What a wonderful gesture.
Yes, isn't that nice?
Yes.
Yeah, so we were very pleased to have the Butler Eagles support us for that. So we're looking forward to that, doing a fourth performance.
That's a pretty good deal. If you want to see the show, you better get on the stick and make reservations.
Yes,
right?
If you got the youngins, $5 tickets. I mean, you can't go to the movies for that. So, no. I mean, it's really a good deal.
By the way, there was someone here at the radio station just today, because I was promoting the fact that you guys were going to be on here talking about Beauty and the Beast, and he said, oh, when's that? And I said, well, next weekend at Suck Up. 5 minutes later, he had bought his tickets.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, right.
Awesome.
I love it.
Yay. Yeah, I'm serious.
I love it. That's too cool.
I mentioned that because you can get them online.
Yes.
And you can get them printed out. I mean,
yeah, you print them out, right?
He walked in with his tickets. I said, well, I just told you about the show 5 minutes ago. And he says, well,
yeah, they're
I
using,
got them online and I printed them out.
They're using ShowClicks. And you can just get online and pay.
So, mtgbutler.org?
Yes.
To get them online?
Yes, to get on the website. And where they can call, well, actually, I think we're done taking phone reservations because we're not at the building anymore as of now. I mean, we start going. We have a final rehearsal with the orchestra just only on the Sunday at the building, and there won't be anybody selling tickets on Sunday. And we go to the theater. We go to the Suck Up Theater starting Monday, and we're there the rest of the run.
Well, easiest way to get them is online anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
mtgbutler.org. That's Musical Theater Guild, obviously. mtgbutler.org. Most of our cultural groups are going to the online tickets now.
Yeah, yeah. It's proven to be, I know at the Suck Up, it's proved to be a valuable tool. Mm-hmm. It's easy for people to get tickets because you can go online at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning.
Who among us hasn't said, oh my gosh, I forgot to get the tickets tonight.
Exactly.
And it's too late now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Never too
exactly.
late.
Exactly. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit, Whitney Angeloni, Rudiger, pretend, and there will be some people listening. Here we are gushing over this show, and rightly so, but there are people who've never seen it. They have no idea what it's about. What's this Beauty and the Beast thing? Okay, you're the beauty, Belle, the beauty. What's the Beast? Who's the Beast?
The Beast is Patrick Erkman, and he is doing a phenomenal job. He sometimes asks me, am I being too mean? And I'm like, no, you're fine. He's a very, very, very believable beast. He's awesome. I'm just a small town girl who likes to read, and that's not common from where they're from. So everybody kind of looks at me like I'm odd. They make references to people call me odd in this poor provincial town that I live in.
Mm-hmm.
And they think my father's crazy. So they always make fun of him. He's like the town joke.
Yeah.
And he gets lost in the woods. He finds this castle. He stumbles upon this. There's enchanted objects. A beast locks him in a dungeon. I go to find it.
It's the castle of the beast.
The castle of the beast he winds up in.
Comes, stumbles upon.
Mm-hmm. And I go to find him, and I take his place. Because Belle is just, she wears her heart on her sleeve, and she's such a caring person. And then I'm his quote-unquote prisoner, which I don't end up turning in to be his prisoner. We fall in love. And at the end, we kiss, and he transforms into a prince.
Little did anyone know.
That's right.
This beast. And by the way, it is a beast, right? I mean, there's quite a costume.
Oh, yeah.
Before the magical transformation?
Yes, before the magical transformation, yes. Mm-hmm. He is definitely a beast.
Don't you think that's part of the joy of this show for kids, that you can have a beautiful young girl, in this case played by Whitney, and then you have this I mean, he's ugly. Let's face
right.
it. Oh, yeah. He's really ugly, and the costume is made, you know, I got this head, this beast head, and yet they fall in love.
Right.
Now, what a lesson that is for, well, not just for young people, it's, for anybody.
It's like she said, she feels like she's out of place in the town, and he's completely out of place.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of identify with that as being, we're kind of alike. I'm considered odd, and you're considered odd. And they kind of bond with that, and it all works out in the end. You know? Mm-hmm.
Beauty and the Beast, the Disney adaptation. This, as I understand it, it's based on like an old French fairy tale. Is that right?
I believe it's true. Yes, it was a
French.
It's a French tale. Story.
Does it specify in the book that this castle was in France, or does that it just doesn't specify?
I don't know. I think that's where that was set. Actually, mm-hmm. I think it was in France because that's where they based this, and mm-hmm. I think Disney's usually pretty true to those kinds of things.
There are some quite some characters in this show, and we'll talk about those in a moment here, but need to pause for a break right now, so we'll pick up our conversation about Beauty and the Beast. The Broadway musical, you can see it live on stage, not this weekend, next weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday at Suckup Theater. One of our sponsors on the program today is Hearing Aid Service by Kelly. I want to talk a little bit about hearing aids. They are a very complex issue these days, and some folks try to make it a little more complex than it really is. What do you want from a hearing aid? Well, you certainly want personalized one-on-one care, and I guarantee you'll get that from Kelly. Your hearing aid will actually be measured to fit your ear, and Kelly will take the time to make sure that everything is the way you want it. From a hearing standpoint, obviously. Also, from a standpoint of comfort, a lot of folks get a great hearing aid and they can hear, but they can't stand to wear the thing because it hurts. Kelly is interested in helping you, not selling you the highest-priced hearing aid. In fact, you'll save thousands because there's no overhead. And you heard that correctly. Thousands, too, by the way. Complimentary consultation. What do you have to lose? People who have made the change or consulted with Kelly are so happy that they did. Kelly, K-E-L-L-I-E. Call the hearing aid lady. Kelly, phone number, 724-756-4327. 724-756-4327. Hearing aid service by Kelly. One of our other sponsors on the program today. Oh, boy. My mouth starts to water as soon as I say the name Cummings. Cummings Candy and Coffee. You realize the holiday season is just around the corner, of course. We're almost a week into October already. Scary, but true. At the Cummings, they offer corporate orders on custom gift boxes to give to clients. And you can choose from an assortment of, and I've done this myself, really wonderful, different Christmas gifts. Chocolate-covered potato chips. I'd never heard of them until I had a box of them from Cummings. And they are divine.
Yes, they are.
They will make you confess to sins you never committed. They are really, really good. They have chocolate-covered potato chips, pretzels, chocolate-covered pretzels, chocolate-covered graham crackers, cherry cordials, about a half-pound bag of Butler's Own proprietary blend of coffee, the Main Street Roast. Whew, can almost smell that aroma right now. It's roasted right at the Main Street location of Cummings. And by the way, you know, they have three locations now. Main Street, where they've been for over 100 years. Also a location at Butler Memorial Hospital and the new Cummings West. It's on Route 68, Evan City Road, right on the outskirts of town, up by the farm show. Serving the Butler community since 1905. Hey, you want more information on those corporate orders for gifts to clients and stuff? Call Barry Cummings, 724-287-3287, 287-3287. They're open 7 days a week. And one other thing. This might be even better than the chocolate-covered potato chips. I'm not sure. Peanut brittle.
Oh, yeah.
Peanut brittle from Cummings. It's not available all the time, but it's available right now. Cummings Candy and Coffee Shop. Okay, are we ready to do lottery numbers yet? Should we do those right now? Get them out of the way? Okay, we got them from Harrisburg? Okay. Pat Parker will do that for you. We'll come back and talk a little bit more about this wonderful show, this Broadway musical. You can see it live on stage at Suckup Theater next weekend. Beauty and the Beast, Musical Theater Guild's fall show. We got to talk about some of the other characters and some of the other cast members, too.
Right. Mm-hmm.
not quite a cast of thousands, but darn close for the show.
You have a big cast, yes.
We will be right back.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick two is 9595. The pick three is 261261. The pick four, 9138. Pick five, 39199. Wild ball for each of those is zero. The treasure hunt is 5, 16, 19, 27, and 28. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $120,000.
Hop the bus. Leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way. Getting there stops here. Just hop the bus. Easy and economical. Just hop the bus. No car, no problem. The bus will get you there. Cause that's what we do. Hop the bus. Leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way.
Welcome back, folks. Guests from the upcoming Musical Theater Guild production of Beauty and the Beast, the Disney arrangement of Beauty and the Beast Broadway musical. Ari Stock is here. He's directing the show. And also visiting with us is Whitney Angeloni Rudiger, who plays Belle, opposite Patrick Erckman, who is the Beast. Belle is the beauty of the title. There are some strange characters in this show, in addition to, well, the Beast is kind of strange.
Yeah.
Belle is normal, beautiful young lady.
I'm a normal one.
But talk about some of the, if people have never seen this show, they're not going to believe this. Talk about some of the other characters, Whitney.
There is a talking candlestick, where he likes to be called a candelabra, played by Sean Klein, who goes to Carn City High School.
How many times have you seen that, a talking candlestick? And by the way, that's the costume, right?
Yes.
That's it, yes.
It's
yes.
a candlestick.
Yes.
Yeah. We have Cogsworth, who is a talking clock, played by Jeff Carey. Then we also have Mrs. Potts, who is played by Beth Ackleson herself.
Guess what Mrs. Potts is?
Yeah, yeah.
Teapot.
A teapot, yeah.
And then her son, Chip, who is played by Gracie Persichini. And then we have a feather duster played by Haley Patsy. And who else am I forgetting?
We have the wardrobe.
Wardrobe, yes.
Played, it's actually the character is Madame de la Grande Bouche.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like a chest of drawers.
Yeah, but that translates with a big mouth, you know, the Grande Bouche. Played by Davlin. Smith, and she's doing a fantastic job.
Yes.
And what amazes me is that these people dance across the stage in these
dance run,
these
get chased
costumes.
Yeah.
I mean, you got a teapot, you got a chest of drawers, you got a coffee cup or a teacup, a candlestick.
Yeah.
All dancing around. Yeah, singing
it's
around
pretty
on stage.
Crazy.
It is crazy.
And we also have a very good Gaston.
Oh.
Being played by Matt Bozanowski.
He's awesome. Perfect for the part.
He is. And LeFou, who's a student at BC3, Tyler Pollock. He's amazing. He's doing a really good job with that, too. And we have Belle's father, Maurice. It's played by Eric Snyder. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much the leads in the cast.
Those are the principals. There are a lot of other characters.
We have a lot of people in the ensemble. We have the silly girls. And the silly ladies, we added that into the
yes.
cast.
Oh, we have Monsieur Dark, who is played by Sean
right.
Klein's father, Mike Klein. So
that's
we
right.
have a son and
yes,
father,
I missed
and then also his little sisters in the ensemble. So it's like a family thing.
And same with Beth Ackleson. I mean, her sister is our music director.
Yes, yes,
Jenny
yes.
Martin, and her sister, somebody you work with real closely's wife, Amy Parker, is one of the silly ladies.
You save a lot on family travel expenses.
Oh, really? They can take a bus and come in. It's a nice thing to have all that.
I already told you my favorite song from the show, and I love the song, Be Our Guest. That's a big ensemble number, right?
Oh, yes.
You got everybody flying around there, waltzing through
yeah.
You got the candlestick and the teacup and the chest of drawers and the wardrobe and everything else. What are some of the other tunes that will stick with people on Larry's Talk?
Oh, well, every song is really, it's wonderful. It's very memorable. Some of Belle's music is so beautiful. I mean, she does several really beautiful numbers.
Do you have a favorite one, Whitney?
I think all of my music's really it's really catchy, and I love it. But I think a change in me is the number between me and my father, Maurice, who's played by Eric Snyder. It's the chance where Belle's very kind of almost timid in the beginning, yet strong, but she's very, she knows herself now. So when she sings this, it's almost towards the end of the musical. But I get to really showcase, I get to belt a little bit and do some different things that, you know, I'm very kind of princessy in the beginning.
So you really do change, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. My besides Be Our Guest, Beauty and the Beast, the title song, is just such a beautiful number, and it's such a nice moment in the show. It's just beautiful. And of course, the Beast's If I Can't Love Her, which is a very powerful song at the end of Act One, and Patrick's doing a terrific job on it. So
you mentioned Jennifer Martin is your musical director.
Yes, right.
Is this hard music to learn?
Some of the ensemble stuff is very hard because there's a lot of harmonies, a lot of harmonies, and Jenny is really good about it. She focuses a lot on that. She makes sure that you hear it, because sometimes when you do big ensemble numbers and you're dancing, those things get lost. So she really focuses on the harmonies, and for us leads, she's worked very well with. But, you know, when you're – no one is more important than any other person in the cast.
Oh, no.
No. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of almost like if you – like since I had Belle, I took on and I made sure that she could focus on other things, that I knew my music. So we only had to go over it a couple times, and so – and all the other
– everybody else has done the same.
Everybody else
it's
has done the same
amazing,
thing. So – my music's not too hard, but yet again, she's taught it so well. So
you choreographed her show with
me. I did.
Yes, and I thank her. I have thanked her profusely, and I'm still thanking her profusely for helping us out. We were having some trouble finding someone that would commit to choreographing the show, and thank the Lord that Whitney was around, and she agreed to do it. Much, you know, taking on that extra bit of work in addition to learning all of Belle's lines and music.
Not easy figuring out dance steps.
Oh, in this show too, it's like it's and you got a group of 40 people on stage trying to make it look make sense, and she's done a remarkable job with it. It's just wonderful.
You have a live orchestra?
Yes, we do. We're actually still looking for a couple pieces, but we have a very nice orchestra. It'll be very, very nice. Trying to represent all the different parts and a very, very good group of
typical
people.
Way that musicals are rehearsed, I mean, this takes place on Broadway, too, and in equity companies and certainly in amateur theater companies in small towns and cities across the nation. You rehearse for weeks with a piano.
Oh, yeah. That's what we've been doing.
And then when you get like 3 or 4 days before showtime, then you bring in
Well, that's what happened Sunday for the first time. The orchestra will get together and rehearse, and then the cast will come in the evening to go over all the musical numbers. With the full orchestra. We've been working with Allison Carey, who's been our accompanist.
She's awesome.
And she is amazing. She has been so good to work with. I love Allison. She's terrific.
What about your sets? There can be some pretty complex things here, woods and castles and all that kind of stuff.
Well, we've tried to keep it a little simpler for what we're doing at the Suck Up. We have plenty of scenery. Matt Stallman has been building away, and Barb Oshie has been helping. Actually, Patrick Erkman, when he's done with rehearsal, he's been going over to the shop and picking up a paintbrush.
I mean, he's so good.
He's an artist. Art training, and he's such a good guy, and he's been helping us paint. So he's been throwing in, you know, doing all extra work. Eric Snyder's been helping as well.
Actually built the whole contraption that Belle's father brings in the beginning, and he's going to a fair to win
Inventor's Fair,
and that's how he gets lost in the woods. And he built this beautiful, super cool bike invention all by himself. And I went to see it the other day, and I was like, you built that by yourself? He's like, yeah. I was like, this is awesome and brilliant. Yeah. And it actually moves and tries to cut the wood. It's perfect.
It's really a cool deal. So.
One thing, I don't know, Belle changes costumes a little bit, but most people, once they're in their teacup suit, they're kind of in their teacup suit, right?
Well, the ensemble, they're in and out of those. They're in different scenes, like the opening number. When they're in the town, some people are just townspeople. And then when we get into the castle, they become castle objects and get into their object costumes, and they're there again for Human Again. That's another really good song in the show. It features everybody, all the castle objects. when talking about it, when you know when they're human again, what they'll do. And it's a great number too.
Good show for kids, for adults, for anybody. Beauty and the Beast, October 13th, 14th, and 15th. That's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Four performances over that span.
Correct.
Two evening performances, Friday and Saturday evenings, and two afternoon performances, Saturday and Sunday afternoon. And the special Saturday matinee, 2 o'clock, is being sponsored by the Butler Eagle with discounted tickets for children.
Right, correct.
For that performance only, $5 for
kids.
$5
for kids, yes. Yeah, so, it's a good deal.
You can get, you can make ticket reservations right now online.
Right, correct. There will be tickets available at the door, but if you're really looking for a specific seat or part of the theater.
Well, can you, if you buy online, can you pick
you
your
can
seat?
Pay, yes, I believe you can do that. Mm-hmm. Yes.
What a high-tech world we live in these
days.
Isn't
that something? Right? How about that? But yeah, if you can select your seats if you buy online. If you come to the door, you kind of have to take what's left. But I imagine there'll be we'll still do quite a bit at the door. So, but
thanks for being with us. I'm anxious to see the show.
Thanks.
Thank
I hope
you so much for having us.
Thanks. Anxious to see it. Love this show. Be our guest. Coming up on tomorrow's program, it's the Friday edition of It's Your Turn. Can't beat that with a stick, huh? Friday. We talk tomorrow with Elon Greenfield from, he's the author of a really beautiful new book. I don't have a copy of it with me or I'd show you guys. It's called My Jerusalem, Photographs and Short Essays About Jerusalem, which is where Elon Greenfield was born. And it's where we'll talk to him tomorrow by telephone from Israel. Also, tomorrow we'll talk about diabetes, type 2 diabetes in kids. I thought that was only for adults. Not anymore, unfortunately. And who else? Old Deb Carbeau will be with us tomorrow.